I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Sound now, because there they go. All right, hold on. And I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, and today we are going to be chatting with Kit Armstrong. He's a libertarian running for the United States office of the U.S. president, and I only became familiar with Ken just recently. But we thought we would have a person who has been like us as citizens, wanting to do something about what we see as divisiveness and as well as just dysfunction in our political systems. And except he has the courage and the guts to actually go out and want to do something about it. And I want to say thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me here, Jason.
And first of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And because you have an interesting background and kind of an interesting story.
Well, I've done quite a few things. I was a military officer. I was commissioned in the Coast Guard and served in joint services with all five branches, commanded a NATO base, and did a bunch of different stuff. And then when I got out, I was in politics in Hawaii, and I've been involved with nonprofits. And gosh, I wrote a column for Pacific Business News for a couple of years. I've been around.
So you... When you got out of the military, though, how long did you serve?
I was in 17 years and then got a reduction in force.
And so it says a U.S. consul. What is that?
I was representative to the U.S. consul general at Palermo. I was in the Pelagi Islands, an Italian island chain, and represented Consul General Shirley there.
Will you just give us a little of your personal background? Are you married with kids? I know you have a great dog named Duke.
Duke is right here in the room with me, 12-year-old. He's my buddy, and he's on the road with me. I'm married. My wife, Dawn, is in Hawaii with our kids and grandkids right now, and she'll join me back on the road in about 2 months. So we've been married. It'll be 20 years next April.
Okay. And I often wonder this. We were talking this morning about the sort of the desire to serve and then the people who choose to seek public office. Why run for president? Like, what is it about that?
I think my best qualification, I mean, I could give you all of the technical qualifications, but my best qualification for president right now is I really don't want the power. And I think that too many people have gone after it because they want to accumulate power. And that's what we've seen over the last century or more, is that gradual accretion of power toward the Oval Office. So I was sitting on the sidelines. I've been out of politics for quite a few years. I was enjoying being out of politics, didn't want to go back in. But about the time of the government shutdown, I decided that if I was going to just sit on the sidelines, I didn't have any right to complain. So it was time to get back in the game.
Okay, so you... Because you're not of the major party, which we will discuss at length a little bit later on, yours is a more challenging road. I think you might agree with that.
Yeah, I'm the long shot. There's no doubt about that. But so was Abe Lincoln in 1860. So.
And so was a fellow named Donald Trump.
There you go.
So I guess what I'm asking you, though, is how do you think that obviously you have the passion for wanting to do it. You want to serve the country, having already done it before. How do you think your campaign can gain traction enough that you can become an actual force in this political environment we have?
Well, that's up to the people, really, and to situations like this. You know, if we can get the match lit, if we can get enough visibility, then maybe we can get a conversation going. The third parties have been marginalized for a long time. Maybe this will be the exception year.
So give us a little insight. We've had libertarians on our show before, but give us your take on the libertarian platform. What does it stand for, and why run as a libertarian?
That's good, because when people hear the word libertarian, sometimes they get kind of confused about who we are. They picture, you know, sort of wild-eyed people, and I'm not that wild-eyed, am I? I think I'm.
We're wild-eyed, so I don't know.
I'm holding it in a little bit.
We might not be a good judge of that.
But the party runs the gamut from anarchist capitalists on one far end, all the way up to the Ron Paul almost Republican end of the party. And then there are those of us who consider ourselves to be centrist libertarians. So I'm not a true anarchist, or even what some people call a Randian libertarian. I'm more in favor of minimum necessary government, and I really believe in the Constitution. I believe it's an elegant document that's been ignored for too long.
And when you say that, and everybody who listens to our show knows I'm always on this, we talk a lot about First Amendment and Second Amendment rights in our public dialogue, but we don't talk that much about Fourth Amendment rights. And that's where I really feel a kinship with the Libertarian Party, this idea that you have a right to privacy and that the government shouldn't be invading your personal life in any way, shape, or form, right? And so, I mean, where are you on that?
I love that topic, as a matter of fact, because the Fourth Amendment has to go hand in hand with the Tenth Amendment, really. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, a lot of the presumed rights, the numeral rights in the Constitution, they don't really belong to the people because they're not specifically stated in the Constitution. But look at the Tenth Amendment. It says the federal government only has the power that's specifically enumerated to it in the Constitution. Everything else belongs to the states and the people. So we presume the right of privacy to the people because it's not given to anybody else. The people have an absolute right to their persons, their papers, and their belongings.
Mm-hmm. And their privacy.
And their privacy, yeah. Exactly.
So listen, I'm going to do my best to try to keep time on this, but I'm always bad at doing that very well. But when we come back, what I would like to do is ask you a little bit about where you see the major problems currently in just not in politics itself, but in the country that you would like to see addressed, and how you, as the leader of the country, would go about putting forth a plan that would kind of help the entire country rather than just, you know, a special interest or anything like that. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I am Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. And today we're speaking with Libertarian presidential candidate Ken Armstrong, who has been telling us how he became involved in what he finds is just, it's kind of a calling to him, because our government is kind of dysfunctional. Our political system has become such that only a few people have all of the power. And in his mind, it should be more of the people's power rather than just any parties or any particular individual. Is that
well said, exactly.
So I wonder, sort of, what are your priorities as a candidate?
Well, in terms of initiatives, one of the first things I want to do is divest the Oval Office of power that doesn't belong to it.
Praise
I want to get
you.
Rid of the Emergency Powers Act. And the great thing, by the way, the great thing about the Emergency Powers Act, a lot of times the president chooses to disobey law with an executive order. I believe that's an impeachable offense. But with the Emergency Powers Act, that's power that's given to the president that he shouldn't have. He can just simply say, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the EPA, the Patriot Act, there are just things that have given the government more power and specifically the executive more power than it ought to have.
I think a prime example of that is the tariffs.
Yes,
if you look
absolutely.
100 years ago, that responsibility rested with Congress. They would have hearings about tariffs. They would have meetings. They would have public could come and speak on whether or not they were going to impose or remove tariffs. And after the
Smoot-Hawley
yeah. debacle, they said, why don't you take care of this, Mr. President, Mr. Franklin Delano Roosevelt? and then it's just gotten worse. Oh, I think they've just accumulated more and more power in the executive office. And now you see it with almost governing exclusively through executive order.
You know, that's true. And what's happened is, according to the Constitution, the power to enact treaties is invested in the legislative branch. But what they've done is they've said, this isn't a treaty, it's an agreement. So therefore, mm-hmm. the president can do whatever he wants to do. He doesn't have that right. He doesn't have that power. It's not enumerated to him. And I'm not throwing stones at the incumbent. This has mm-hmm. been done for decades now that the presidents have taken this power that they don't have.
Well, when you said that they could be impeached, I can think of at least three presidents from both parties that
yes.
you could impeach
yes.
for misusing that executive power.
You know,
if we include
the incumbent. So when you sign an executive order that says we're not going to obey a law that's duly enacted by Congress, you're conspiring with members of the executive branch, and conspiracy is a felony. Mm-hmm. So that's an impeachable offense. And I'm not throwing rocks at the incumbent. This has been a habit that's been followed by both parties for too long.
Well, and I think the excuse is, I think when you talk with people about this and say, do you really want a king? Do you really want an executive with this much power? Their comeback is always, like, I hated the deferred action on childhood arrivals, DACA, the Dreamer executive order. I love that idea of giving these people a path to citizenship or a path to legal documented life here. But I don't favor doing it by executive order because that's not proper, right?
That's a king. That's right.
Yeah. But so because people agree with that policy, they're willing to look the other way. Now you have a different political party in office with different agendas, and we're screaming and yelling. Those same people are upset, whereas the other people who are screaming and yelling about DACA, now they're saying, of course we should change all of healthcare through executive order, right? These are good changes. And I just wonder how you get people to stop playing team politics. Like, it's your team winning, one team winning and one team losing, we're all losing.
You know, that's actually, you asked me what my agenda is, and I have initiatives, like yeah. I said, that I'd like to follow. But really, my take on what I would like to do in office is to start bringing people to the table for dialogue. I don't have any, believe me, I've been around a long time, and I've been in Washington, and I know how it works. But I do believe that we need to remember that under the Constitution, everybody doesn't get their way all the time. And I don't want to get my way all the time. That would be totalitarianism. So we need to learn.
But that's what people want now, Ken.
Oh, I mean, they're asking for it, and it's so
wrong.
So
how do you convince people that that is not what they want?
You know, some of the recent polls, Gallup, back in November, they polled nearly 60% of Americans are tired of the two sides that are polarized. Mm-hmm. So we've really got a majority of Americans who agree that that's not working. What we need to do is agree to sit down at the table. And I don't want to marginalize anybody, but you know there are voices at the extremes that just want to throw hand grenades. And we've got to say your time is over.
Mm-hmm. And when you say we've got to say that, I think one way to say that is by having viable third, fourth, fifth party
Amen.
Candidates. How do you How do you make that happen? I mean, or can you make that happen?
Well, the president can't do it all by himself unless he becomes the tyrant that I don't want to be. But I think as a people, we need to roll back the Election Reform Acts of the 70s that limited government to the two major parties. We need to take the words of John Adams very seriously when he said that a two-party system would be a threat to the republic. And we need to open the doors on letting small people and small money have an opportunity to gain access.
You are preaching.
No. Amen. Here's the thing. In principle, I can agree with you, but when you have the Supreme Court saying that corporations are people, how do you...
And they have the rights.
Right, and they have the same rights. How do you then affect what you just described in having small people have a larger voice?
Yeah, I think, you know, the only way that we can deal with that is either through constitutional amendment or to bring cases to the Supreme Court that more clearly define that. That's the kind of the two ways to do that. But are corporations people? In certain contexts, corporations do have the rights that people have. But since the corporations are already made up of people and those people have rights, the corporation shouldn't have supernumerary rights.
Mm-hmm. Listen, again, we're going to come back. And what I want to ask you about then is we're going to kind of do what we have to do is there are issues that face our country and that the other candidates for president are having to answer. And we'd like to talk to you about them and get your perspective on, you know, issues like immigration, health care and those kinds of things. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Welcome back to Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, and today we're speaking with Libertarian candidate for president Ken Armstrong, who is in Salt Lake on what he is calling his healing tour, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But right now in this segment, what we wanted to do was get some perspective from you on issues that the country is facing and that have been kind of top of mind, major issues. And I guess I'm going to start with immigration, because that seems to be something that we can't get away from. And I'd like to your thoughts.
Right. It's not so much we can't get away from it. It seems that it just keeps getting worse. Everything we do is making the problem worse.
Absolutely. And I think part of the problem is that we're working from the wrong paradigm. We're trying to make the laws that we've got in place now work. I do believe that the president is bound to enforce the laws that we have. There are ways of doing it, and I'm not entirely on board with the way it's being done right now. But I really think that what we need to do is go back and just completely peel back the system and say, why is this so broken? We're talking about building a wall to prevent undocumented aliens from entering the country. And the interesting thing is, in 2014, 42% of all the undocumented people in the United States were visa overstays. You can't build a wall to fix that. We need to figure out how to fix our visa system to make it workable, to make it accessible, and to make it work better for the American people.
Well, I think one issue that we were just made aware of through another podcast that we produced for one of the congressmen here is that companies want to hire people from other countries. And they want to live here. They may not necessarily want to be citizens or become Americans, but they want to work here and learn to speak English and all of that and work in American businesses because business is global now. But they can't our visa system is unwieldy. It's ridiculous to try to figure out. And I 100% agree with you that if we solved that problem, if we looked at that end of it, then we could then affect better change. More significant change at the border. But what do you do? Like, how do you convince? It's such a catchy phrase. It's such a – there's a visual associated with it. How do you shift people away from sort of the emotional attachment they have for or against what's happening at our southern border?
You know, I think Dr. King was doing a good job of it before he was assassinated in 68. I think that if the American people want to mandate a new approach and elect a third party candidate, or even if they want to elect a major party candidate who's a real rebel, although I don't see one on the horizon right now, but if the American people want to stand up for change, then we can actually make that change happen. There just has to be a clear mandate for it.
Do you think the two parties are getting stronger or weaker?
they're getting stronger in terms of their grip on the system, but internally, I think they're spinning apart on both sides. Just in the news this morning, there's a huge feud on the left between Pelosi and AOC, and we're having similar things on the right with one member of Congress leaving his party because he doesn't believe in what he sees going on.
And you have a Democratic presidential candidate in Tulsi Gabbard who's saying, I understand that. I get it. I feel that way. I'm not leaving the Democratic Party, but it needs to change.
And I knew Tulsi's dad when I was in politics in Hawaii, and that's a good family, so I respect her words.
Yeah. I mean, but I think if you're in the party and you're saying there are issues.
That's it. I mean, she's being honest about what she sees, and it's pretty bad.
So I do think that's interesting. What would you do, or what suggestions do you have on the issue of health care and the
That's a huge banana to peel.
Yeah.
I think
2 minutes or less.
Oh, thank God. Solve all the world's problems. I think, first of all, government has made most of the mess, and we're trying to dig our way out of a hole, and that's probably not the solution. Mm-hmm. There are some things that government could do very quickly to bring the cost of health care down, and it's the cost that's driving all the trouble we're having. Mm-hmm. One of the simple things that I see that government could do would be to allow foreign pharmaceutical companies within certain careful guidelines to sell pharmaceuticals in the United States. We know, Earl, my road manager here, and I, we just came back up from Mexico where we've spent a lot of the last 3 years. You can buy medicines down there that would cost you $500 here. You can buy them with a few bucks out of your pocket down there. Mm-hmm. We know that we can bring the costs down. We just have to deregulate and get government out of the way.
Yeah. And I think you're when you're talking about the money that's involved there, that's a logjam. Good luck with that one.
Yeah, there's big lobby interests there.
Can I ask you, what do you think about the idea of universal health care?
I believe that everyone needs health care. I just believe that government isn't big enough and rich enough to provide all of the health care that everybody thinks that they would want. And I think we need to find an open free market solution that would be able to provide that care.
As a veteran, how would you get us out of the Middle East, and what would you do about the base in Cuba, the Guantanamo Bay?
You like to ask easy questions, don't you? First of all, I have to kind of roll that back because I believe that the president doesn't have the authority granted in the Emergency Powers Act.
Okay.
One of the first things I would do in the Oval Office is I would say to Congress, if you want us to be prosecuting a war, you need to declare it. You have 30 days or I'm bringing the American service people home. So then if Congress wants us to prosecute a war, then we need to have a definite goal in mind and not just these are the bad guys, we're going to bomb them until the cows come home. That's just not working.
You know, a lot of people have run for that office and have said similar things in back about either bringing them home or closing Guantanamo. But then when they get into the job, they change their minds. Is that a concern for you?
One of the reasons why Guantanamo is such a hot potato is, if you'll recall, both of the last two presidents wanted to close Guantanamo, but nobody wanted to take the prisoners. And so you have this issue of – and another issue, by the way, with Guantanamo prisoners is some of them different rights accrue when you bring them on to the jurisdiction of American civil jurisdiction as opposed to military jurisdiction. So there's issues there.
That's the reason they put them over there in the first place.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And you know what? I have to say, honestly, Jason, they did that to play a game with the system. They're gaming the system.
They absolutely were gaming the system because then they had wiggle room that they would not have had otherwise.
Exactly.
Thank you, Alberto Gonzalez and Donald Rumsfeld. But anyway,
not to mention any names, right?
I was going
to
say.
Don't call anybody out.
It's Armstrong2020.com. It's Ken Armstrong for President, a libertarian who stands for your rights, liberty, equality, and the Constitution. I love to see that. We're going to continue and talk to Ken about what he is on now is called his healing tour. And I'd like to ask him more about what that is and how he hopes to bridge the divisiveness gap that seems to be growing in our country. You're listening to Voices of Reason. You're listening to Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson, and today we're speaking with Ken Armstrong. He is president. He's running for president under the Libertarian banner.
You've anointed him president.
I like that. Let's go with that.
I was going to say, right? If I could do that, right? So he's running for president as a third-party candidate, and he's on what he's calling his healing tour, and he wants to kind of bridge the divisiveness gap that seems to be occurring in our country. But before we get to that, Amy wanted to ask him a little bit about budget numbers and the deficit.
I just wondered, you know, like, did you have a strategy or an opinion about is a deficit a good thing, a bad thing? Where
are we at? Well, we don't have enough time to talk about the strategy, but honestly, we're spending $3 billion a day that we don't have right now. Mm-hmm. In increasing the budget or the national debt, and we're paying $1 billion a day in interest on the national debt, and every penny of that is going on the credit cards of our children and our grandchildren. At some point, things have to fall. You know, the current administration likes to say that the budget is booming. Boom is a sound you hear when things hit the floor, and that's what I'm afraid of.
Okay, well, you give us a little insight into. We talk a lot on our show about the lack of civility and the divisiveness and the team, the sports, how sports has infused our political process at this point. What can you do as a candidate running for national office to change the conversation?
That's a real thing, by the way sports has infused our culture. And now, you know, I remember when there was animosity between Dodgers fans and Braves fans or whatever in
Yankee
California,
fans.
Yankees fans.
Fan,
and yeah, the Yankees
fan.
And yes, that has infused our culture. And we've gotten to the point where anybody who doesn't share our opinions is de facto the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what my wife Dawn and I have visited.
And they hate America.
Yes, right. Because everybody who disagrees with you mm-hmm. hates America. Whatever their agenda is, yeah. is evil. And we need to stop categorizing people that way. But that's easier said than done because. I think the social media environment that we're in, everything gets encapsulated into a few words, a meme, a short idea, often a lie that catches fire and goes viral. But Dawn and I, my wife and I, as we traveled the first 17 states on our tour, we found that almost everybody we met was tired of that. And what we need is we need to capture the energy of those people. And that's hard to do. We recognized that back in the 60s when there were more people against the war than for it. But it was hard to capture the energy of those people to make a change. So that is the trick right now to bring those people together and give them a voice.
And I wonder, because we talk to people like that, we feel that way. If it isn't this idea that you want to bet on a winning horse, right? So I want change. I want everything you've talked about, like I'm 100% with you. But I want you to win because I feel like what if all of us give our energy to you and then this is always the argument against a third party candidate, then the guy that nobody wants wins.
You know, I don't want either of the somebodies, so it really doesn't matter to me. You know, if we don't win, it doesn't matter to me which side wins. But
we're all losing.
We're in it to win it. And you know what? I cannot possibly lose this election because I'm already not president of the United States, so I can't lose that. But what I can do is make an incremental gain by starting a conversation. So if the conversation doesn't end in November of 20, maybe it ends in November of 24. But we got to make this conversation happen.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think Ross Perot passing away recently, and Jason has said that he supported Ross twice. I did not. but I love the idea that he gained so much power. And I thought, this is it. This is the breakage of the two-party system. From now on, we're going to have three parties. And we have in certain places have a viable third party. But it's never really caught on nationally. And why do you think that is?
because of the power that's invested in the two corporations that are running the show. And it's really that simple. We need to break the backs of that power, and we do it. I'm not advocating violence. We don't need to go violent. What you guys are doing, you know, it's so hard for a third-party person to even get any airtime because they're not considered viable, so nobody wants to talk to them.
Yeah. See, and the interesting thing to us is that this is how you get good ideas, because we've heard what the two parties have said, and most often we don't really like either one of them. And so,
or they're just offering us platitudes, right? Like we want to see, like, what if you have power? It seems like you come desperately attached to holding on to it. If you don't have power, you seem like you'll do anything to get it. And for me, the whole change is like, how do you shift it to where you're comfortable with someone else having you giving some power, but because you trust them that they're going to share it with you, that they're going to respect what you voted for. I mean, we have issues just in our own state about the legislature. The voters vote for a bunch of propositions, and the legislature goes up and repeals them all. You know?
Yes, exactly.
And so how do you get to that? How do you restore that trust, I guess? Or can you?
We're not going to do it all at once. There needs to be a groundswell movement of the people. We need to be willing to do the heavy lifting. We need to be willing to accept disappointment and to not reach our goal in 140 or 280 characters or whatever they're giving us now.
Is it easier, you think, to get your message out, even though like mainstream media doesn't give you the opportunity, but is it easier because you have social media or you can make videos? Is it still just as hard as it's always been?
Well, that's sort of leveling the playing field, but now it's like a whole bunch of narcissists crowded into a room shouting and hoping that everyone's listening to them. So, you know.
I don't know that I could have said that any better. It's like everybody, you haven't listened to me, but you're going to listen to me now.
I have more faith in social media than Jason. Jason's basically given up.
You know, the people have let me down so often. I don't know what to do with them.
Not give up.
Right? Okay, so I'll give you a minute or so. Why should people consider your candidacy and why should they vote for you?
Well, I do have real experience, and I joked about that a little bit at the beginning, but actually in the last 40 years, there's only been one president-elect who's had more background than I have in federal government, in national defense, and in international relations. So I really do actually have background, and I've held low-level office in Hawaii, and I admit I think the dog catchers outranked me in the office that I was elected to. But I've been behind the scenes in federal government for most of my life and actually worked in both of the parties. I do know how the system works. I have worked with the highest levels of government, and I think I'm ready for the office.
Thank you so much for stopping by. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Listen, and I'm going to tell you something. I'm always grateful to hear just a reasonable person talking into the microphone who isn't part of a corporate system. Who's you tell the truth, and I very much appreciate it. Thank you very much. And, before I get going here, I'm going to say join us again for the next episode of the Voices of Reason podcast. And if you have any questions or comments about our show, please email us at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @ADOnSports and at @JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. You can also find us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on Google Podcasts, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or any other places where you might find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We'd love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep the dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.